Chapter 5. Charlie. The newly crowned queen was lying in bed. They had prepared a very nice room for her in the courthouse. It was usually where high-ranking angels and other souls were held before trial. She had spent the night staring at the wall. The echoes of screams and images of carnage from the day had played and replayed in her mind. At some point, she must have fallen asleep, but she'd remembered not wanting to. A silly, childish idea had worked its way into her, that maybe if she'd waited long enough, she would wake up. That it would all turn out to be a bad dream, and that at any minute, she'd blink and be opening her eyes next to Vaggy. She knew that when she woke up the next day, in a bed in the heavenly courthouse, cold and alone, then it would be real. Then there would be no more pretending that things might go back to how they'd been, when her world was still happy, and there was a reason to live besides vengeance. Eventually, her body had betrayed her, and she must have passed out, though she didn't remember when. Now she was staring up at a stark white ceiling, and it was all she could do not to start crying again. Eventually, she got up and went to the closet to change, completely alone in her morning routine, her movement stiff and deliberate as she pulled on a white undershirt, red slacks, and red blazer, her usual attire, and felt a pang of outrage at the seemingly courteous choice. They stood by, idle, while a monster in the skin of an angel destroyed her home, family, and people. But hey, they'd gone out of their way to give her the clothes she liked. When it came to empty gestures that meant nothing, nobody beat the angels of heaven. It was like they were mocking her, as if to validate her feeling of salt being rubbed in her wounds, as the new queen pulled on her blazer and went to the mantle, retrieving her heir's crown from where she had placed it last night. She noticed a painting hung right above it that she hadn't before, when she stumbled in here the previous evening. It was a flowery, exaggerated depiction of her father and his host of demons being cast out of heaven. That huge angel in the black armor she'd seen yesterday, Michael, as he was named, was depicted with a snarl of rage on his features as he kicked Lucifer, whose face was painted in a terrible expression of loss and betrayal, off a heavenly cloud into a yawning black pit. Around the War Master and the Morning Star, there were depicted more angels, casting down other demons. The one known as Gabriel was frozen in an expression of resigned determination. Staff striking it would look like Uncle Asmodeus. Beelzebub, her carefree face twisted in an expression of sorrow, was falling, having been thrown by an angel she didn't know, with a glowing silver halo and thin, lean, gray-plumed wings. Other figures in the background she could see being cast down as well, like Mammon, Satan, Belphegor, and Leviathan, and countless others in even less detail. It was as if the painting was mocking her. She could practically hear the implied slight. Your kind are beneath us, and always will be. This thought repeated over and over and over in her head until all she could see was red. With a roar, Charlie blasted the piece of art with a fireball, and it was no more. She sunk to her knees, buried her head in her hands, and through the tears she could no longer hold back, she wished against all reason that she had the power to blast all of heaven to cinders as easily as she had done to the painting in the frame. But as her cries slowed, the wish went as unanswered as her sorrow, and she drew herself together. Charlie could cry when she got home. For now, she couldn't bear to be in this place any longer. Even the blasted ruins and bodies of her friends would be better company than the false smiles and condescending courtesy of this gleaming, golden den of hypocrisy that was heaven. It was the late morning now, and after refusing to eat a breakfast despite Emily's protestations, only drinking a black coffee and repeatedly asking to go home already, the concerned seraphim finally let up, and she had taken her out front of the courthouse, promising personally to see her home. Charlie had repeatedly said that it wasn't necessary, but Emily insisted. It was sweet, just how kind and innocent the young seraph was. She glowed with a warmth and desire to show kindness that seemed to bubble out of her. As little as 2 days prior, Charlie and her had been so very similar. The newly crowned Demon Queen wondered, idly, if going through a similar loss would cause Emily to lose the brightness, like it had done to her. And after that, Charlie wondered if she herself would ever get what the Seraph had back. Ever feel happy again. Finally, she took a deep breath and tried to center her mind in the moment. The events of the next few hours, how she responded to the feelings of her people, how she addressed them, these decisions she would make would set the tone for her rule. She had to reintroduce herself to Hell as a leader they could trust, not a fool to be laughed at. It wouldn't be easy, but Charlie thought she could do it. If her father had commanded respect from all for so many thousands of years, why couldn't she? The portal home depicted Pentagram City as a blasted, burnt ruin, shimmering through the ethereal membrane of spiritual separation that divided heaven and hell. It smelled of a battlefield. The killing field of warriors, a fight bitter fought, and in the end, terribly lost. There were the normal sense of home, fire, brimstone, and sulfur, and that myriad of filth that made up Pentagram City itself. But now there was more. Blood, rot, burnt plastics and rubber, the stink of open guts and dried gore. It all came together into an awful miasma that made Charlie want to vomit. Emily's hand in hers made it feel a little bit better, though, and her sad smile reassured the young, newly crowned Queen of Hell. Her angelic friend gave her an encouraging nudge.
I know that things are terrible right now, and that the last thing that you want to do is be loaded with responsibility and strife, but you're one of the strongest people I know, Charlie,
Emily said.
You're kind and understanding, and you always want to help whoever you meet. You're practically an honorary angel.
She looked around at their exorcist escort, who were staring ahead, clearly not listening. After a moment's hesitation, she leaned in and whispered,
"Certainly more of an angel than Adam is." "Thank you, Emily. That means a lot coming from you,"
the Demon Queen said. Charlie was touched by the words, but she didn't have the heart to tell Emily how hard it had been lately, to think like she had before. The moment that her friends and family had been killed, Charlie had felt this terrible resentment inside of her. This part of her that warred with herself, telling her that she'd been wrong, and her father, and heaven, and all the doubters had been right. That these sinners had never cared about anyone but themselves. She wanted to remain the good, kind person she'd always tried to be, but these people had hung her out to dry. After all she'd done to try to help them. Still, after all of that, it was her nature to tell herself that it wasn't their fault. It had never been certain to work. Besides, even if it did work, why should they have taken her word for it? Still, would it have been so much to ask for at least some to stand with her? Most had been killed anyhow. If they hadn't been so stubborn and dismissive of her dream and stood with her, maybe the fight would have gone differently. Then again, she just didn't know what to think anymore. All Charlie knew was that even as her dreams had fallen apart around her, she still had to rule. Uncertainty was something you could never show as a leader. Before, she'd had Vaggie to lean on, Alistair to back her up, and her friends to cheer her. And now, they were gone. Alistair she hadn't seen die, but he probably had been killed. Adam took him away for some reason, and she hadn't seen them since. Really, she doubted that she would ever see him again. With that fact being plain, she determined that she had only one real choice. No matter how bad she felt, no matter how scared she was,
She had to push that down and move with confidence and decisiveness. More than anything, she wanted to repay Adam for what he did. And if the first man were ever be made to pay for his sins against her and everyone she'd loved, she would need to be strong and inspire confidence. She couldn't do it alone. And with all the resources of hell now at her direct control, all Charlie needed to do was take the reins.
"Are you ready to go?"
Emily asked, nudging her, and Charlie came back to reality and nodded.
"I'm ready,"
she said finally. She didn't feel ready, but she had to be. Now was the time. Emily stepped with her as they left heaven's rich blue skies and glowing warm sunlight for the comparatively dim, red-hued glow of hell. Stepping out of the portal, Charlie found that they were on the edge of Pentagram City's limits, right outside of the Has-Been Hotel.
"Do you want to go back to..."
Emily and Charlie turned and looked, but the hotel was gone. It was a ruin, burned down and destroyed, the death of her hopes illustrated in a pile of burnt wood beams, crushed concrete and drywall, shattered marble, and bent steel. Charlie felt the tears in her eyes and realized how deeply she wanted to be alone.
"Emily, you need to go."
"But Charlie..."
"Open a portal tomorrow and check on me if you must. But right now I need to be alone."
Emily fidgeted, clearly not comfortable leaving her here without protection. Charlie was about to blow up on her, but realized a more tactful approach might suit the situation better. She took Emily by the hands and looked into her eyes as the Seraph blushed slightly, unused to something as romantic as hand-holding.
"Please, Emily," Charlie said. "I need to bury who I've lost. I have to enter hell on my own, take my own power. I want to be alone right now. I know you mean well, but I need you to leave."
Emily looked a little hurt, but nodded, understanding that it wasn't her place to intrude on Charlie's emotions. She turned and opened the portal back to heaven.
"Charlie,"
she said over her shoulder. The Queen of Hell looked at her, expectant.
"Good luck,"
was all she said before stepping through the portal and leaving the shattered Morning Star there with her thoughts. Charlie moved as if in a dream towards the hotel, remembering how beautiful it had once been, how she had wished and hoped here with everyone she had brought into her life, how they'd all become such a close, happy family of misfits together, how much they loved each other. And now it was just her. Now it was just Charlie Morningstar, left to hold the broken pieces and blame herself. It felt like hours she meandered through the bodies, cannibals, the occasional piece of an exorcist, an arm here, a leg there, a helmeted head rarely, but most of their bodily remains had been taken up by their sisters. There were also hundreds of fallen angelic weapons, but all these facts were secondary to finding her friends. Eventually, she did. Every one of them had died painfully, struggling, never having a chance. The details of their injuries and agonies sort of blended together with the tears in her eyes into brief flashes. Angel's death grimace of pain and terror, the gaping hole in Cherry's head where her eye had been, Husk's spilled guts, Nifty's limbs bent in all the wrong ways, trying to keep from looking at these things, she used her magic to draw enough dirt from the ground to make graves for all of them. Finding hunks of rubble in the hotel's wreckage that she could burn their names into, to act as makeshift headstones. She even made one for Pentheus, and one for Alistair, though their mortal remains were not here with the others. They had still been her friends. Finally, she found Vaggie.
Her eyes had sunken slightly, and the lips had peeled back in death. She almost seemed to be smiling, and that illusion made Charlie gag, but there was nothing in her stomach to heave up. She took a small lock of her girlfriend's white-gray hair and pressed it to her chest before sliding the precious strands into her coat pocket. Then, she consigned Vaggie to the earth as well. Finally, she found her father, most of him, anyhow. Though his corpse was as she had left it, the head had been taken, as if to add even more unnecessary insult to the injury that was her life. Her desire to see Adam dead somehow grew even stronger. Kill her family, burn her home, slaughter her people, all of that, and he still had the gall to desecrate her father's corpse? As if he hadn't done enough? With angry tears in her eyes, she was about to lower her father into his grave when she thought better of it. Her father had been of hell. He had been its king. Besides, he was headless, and it just didn't feel right to bury him incomplete. She knew what she had to do, but it took her a very long time to do it.
Dad,
she eventually said to the body, barely able to form words through the pain.
I'm sorry about this, about what happened. I'm sorry you came to help me. I'm sorry I didn't win on my own. And I'm sorry I can't do more to honor your memory.
Drawing her arm back, Charlie let the burning power of hellfire collect deep in her chest to run like goosebumps across the flesh of her shoulder and arm until it ended at her fingertips, and a gout of flame consumed her father's corpse. In only a couple seconds, it burned up like dry old parchment. And after that, the young queen felt better. Physically better, stronger, more steady. As the ashes of Lucifer Morningstar's body blew away in the gentle breeze, she wondered, had she absorbed something from her father? Had some of his power passed to her? She tried to transform, focusing on an eagle, then a slug, then a dog, and a cat, and a pig. Nothing worked. But she did feel a little better. Maybe it was closure. Her internal scrutiny was interrupted by a soft rustling coming from the wreckage of the hotel. She looked up, gazing cautiously into the darkness of the collapsed rubble. There was nothing. But then, two eyes in the dark. Yellow and reptilian, wide at first, but then narrowing to focus on the daughter of Lucifer. Charlie took a step back, fear of the unknown gripping at her until a pinkish-red blur leapt onto her and she fell on her back, screaming as it ripped at her. Wait, no. It wasn't ripping. Wasn't biting, not even scratching. It was licking her face. Hesitantly, Charlie opened her eyes and saw it. Razzle! Her surviving little pet was throwing itself at her to kiss her face and rub its soft, comforting fluff into her cheek, making happy little whimpers, clearly having missed her down here a great deal. The poor thing, he'd probably been down here all by himself since the extermination yesterday, wandering the bodies, not understanding what happened, only the corpses of her friends, allies, and hundreds of strangers there to keep him company. As Charlie held the little demon and shared its warmth and companionship for a moment, it was as if she was home with her father, and everything was still okay. It instantly made her feel better to know that she had at least one old friend left. They hadn't killed everyone.
"Did you miss me?"
she asked with a tired smile, and Razzle answered her with another round of sloppy kisses that made her giggle. Still petting him, Charlie was momentarily startled when Razzle stiffened in her grip, squirmed around her, and hissed, his dragon tail flicking and little claws digging slightly painfully into her arms. He began to growl, and that was when she smelled it, the rot, the sick stench of incredibly intense decay and filth filled the air, like an open latrine pit and a rotting pile of carcasses, and the smell of fermenting bodily fluids all in one, and made her cringe. Was there some massive corpse pit nearby? If there was, it had to have been moving, somehow, because the smell was getting stronger. Charlie heard a shuffling again, but this time it wasn't in the rubble. As she followed the noise, Razzle got more agitated and angry, but he clung to her all the same, ready to defend the girl whose safety was his sole purpose in life, with the same zeal and ferocity his brother had died showing. As she closed the distance, Charlie stepped around the corner of the hotel's wreckage and saw something. It was not exactly plain what it was, but there, where the back entrances of the hotel had once been, there was a thing. It looked like a big brown burlap sack just sliding from one corpse to the other. The smell of putrefaction was clearly coming from whatever it was, the thick odor almost palpable at this proximity. The creature was all of 30 feet away and hadn't seemed to have noticed her yet. As she looked more carefully, she saw it was stained in both red and pale gold blood. Razzle was being quiet now, following her lead, though he clearly didn't trust this figure. She noticed through quiet observation that it was bent over an exorcist's body. This one, the genocidal sisterhood, had somehow missed. All Charlie could see of the corpse was her face. The rest of the body was hidden behind the massive creature that squatted over her. The dead angel's mask was off, and the young warrior woman's features, which once may have been beautiful, were now torn and ruined. Her hair had once been cut short to her neck, though its color had been lost in the golden gore of her death. The exorcist's face was a twisted mess of yellowish angel blood and meat, where it looked as if a wild animal had bitten off her lips, cheeks, and licked out her eyes. Noticing how the weird lump thing was leaned over her, the sounds of smacking and wet crunching and chewing coming from him, she realized it was eating the dead angel. As it ate, it was muttering stuff, indistinct, but Charlie could make out a few words.
Yes, angel flesh, flesh blood, yes, flesh. Oh, taste, how it tastes good.
She hadn't noticed before. Between the dead exorcist's bloodily twisted features and the stench of the mystery creature before her, but it was eating her. Charlie hated these angels with every fiber of her being, and knowing how her father's body had been abused, she found it hard to feel pity for the corpse or its loved ones, but still, eating it in such a way was just too much. Death was far enough, perhaps a particularly slow death, in the case of a certain gold-winged chauvinist. Deciding she'd endured enough of this, she cleared her throat and spoke.
"Hey! Who are you?"
Instantly, the sound stopped, and the big, lumpy thing in the sackcloth froze stiff. It stayed absolutely still for a couple seconds before Charlie, a little worried now, repeated herself.
Who are you?
She asked a little gentler, as this thing's reaction had her remembering the horror movies her and Vaggie used to watch on Saturday nights, the ones where her girlfriend would always have to hide her eyes by the end. Slowly, ever so slowly, the huge, vaguely round creature turned to regard her. Upon seeing its visage, Razzle gave another loud hiss as he leapt from her arms and protectively wrapped himself around Charlie's leg to face the stranger. Its face was obscured under a hood, the same burlap that it wore over the rest of its form, and she couldn't make out real facial features. Instead, it had a long, white beak, a white face, and tiny pinprick eyes that she could barely see were eyes at all. Was that its face? A mask? She couldn't tell from this distance. The tip of the mask's nose and spots of its face were stained with angel blood, and its entire front was stained yellow and red both. Bits of chunky, indistinct viscera dripping down from his hopelessly stained sack coat and onto the ground. It was as if it had been gorging itself on the flesh of the fallen combatants, friend and foe, like some kind of foul, monstrously huge, flightless bird. It looked at her for a moment, and hesitantly, Charlie took a step forward. It made a sound like... Charlie didn't really know, actually. It sounded like the buzz of flies, the skittering of spiders, the squeak of rats, and the high whine of mosquitoes. And somewhere in there, a phlegm-filled, choking, almost human shout of alarm. It moved obscenely, its lumpy mass bulging as if several individuals at once were struggling to force the stinking monstrosity to run. Although what it was doing was more of a shuffle, but a very quick one.
Hey, wait!
Charlie moved to go after it, but only got as far as the corpse it was kneeling over as she watched it run through the rubble and across bodies faster than she could go safely. She was about to try chasing him anyway, when a weak grip on her ankle made her gasp and nearly lose her footing. Looking down, she saw the Exorcist, and to her abject horror realized she was alive. Her eyeless face and lipless mouth were unspeakably horrible to look upon this close up. The stench of her open bowels and the overflowing blood everywhere was unspeakable. Her broken wings lay next to her, one torn almost completely off, another twitching helplessly under her own weight. She was making a gargling, choking sound and frantically, desperately sawing her hand across her throat. Her gurgling gasps were wordless, and Charlie realized that at some point that creature had torn out and eaten her tongue. With the one arm that remained to her, conspicuously, her jugular, that most vulnerable of areas, had been left completely unscathed. Her legs twitched, and suddenly her few coherent motions stopped as the angel went into seizure. Charlie realized, belatedly, that the creature which had been consuming her had not wanted her to die. It had been eating her flesh alive, on purpose. She noticed then, as the exorcist's rictus maw snapped, that it had eaten her tongue as well. The gesture she made, however, told the words plain that the angel herself could not voice. Kill me. Kill me. Kill me. Kill me. Kill me. Charlie's breathing became labored, her body shuddering. She had never killed anyone before. Never even hurt anyone before stabbing Adam that one time during the battle. She knew she needed to do this. It was an exorcist, but it had suffered more than enough. The fact that it wasn't dead already was nothing short of staggering. Still, she hesitated. Razzle was there with her, though, and he knew what she needed. Her father had made him and his brother special, to be there for her, in good and in bad. Crawling down next to the exorcist's face, the draconic goat raised its little paw, and in it was a small ball of hellfire. It threw it down onto the angel's face hard, and the flash of light would have made Charlie look away if she hadn't already done so. The skull burnt to ash and cinder in an instant, and the body jerked once and went still. Charlie suddenly and violently threw up the black coffee she'd had that morning and shakily walked far enough away to where she couldn't smell that body anymore. Sighing, trying to will her hands to stop shaking, she sat down on a relatively flat surface in the mess, what must have once been a desk in one of her higher-class rooms, and held her head in her hands, collecting herself for a moment before, finally... she felt ready. She needed to go into town. Pentagram City was her home, and whatever remained of her people would need her right now. And if she wanted to be any decent kind of queen, she needed them. Charlie had walked for about an hour down the road from the hotel down to the city, following the path of dead, mutilated cannibals. Razzle floated on his little draconic wings at her shoulder, following her as she went. The smell of death only became more extreme as she neared the city limits. And finally, as Charlie stepped out from the path onto the asphalt of Pentagram City proper, she saw, with horror, what had become of her home. The buildings were destroyed, dozens burned down, hundreds more damaged and dangerous. There were even still some fires guttering in a few high-rise buildings, little baubles of orange dancing like partygoers, celebrating the death of hell and the ruin of the one place she'd called her own. Steeling herself, Charlie walked through the desolate streets, strewn with blood and bodies and all the hallmarks of chaos and devastation. There were one, maybe two bodies of the fallen angels for 50 dead denizens of hell. Apparently, Adam had stopped caring about the few rules that the extermination had the second her father had died, as there were Hellborn and Sinner lying side by side, slaughtered like animals. Many were killed with wounds to the back, or the rear of the neck, or the crown of the head. Blows done as they had been caught, fleeing, begging, trying to get away. It was sick. Yet still, that voice at the back of her mind whispered its cruel words, cutting her to the core of her person, making her feel like a monster for thinking the things it made her think. They deserved it. These sinners abandoned you. It's their fault your friends are dead. She'd felt these thoughts less. She started to see a few living sinners in Hellborn, as Charlie had begun nearing the heart of the town, and felt her heart bleed for them. Everyone was so broken, so lost. Many didn't seem to see her, but a few stared with wide eyes. Some of their eyes looked at her with blame, some with confusion, but some, it seemed, maybe could have been looking at her with hope, that she might be there to help. She clung to that, wishing, despite her doubts, that some of them maybe would listen. She finally made it to the center of the pentagram and took in the sight. The V's tower was located in the center of town, and it looked ravaged. Many of the windows shattered, half of their neon signs crashed down into the ground, periodically sparking. The doors smashed in, and dead employees littered everywhere. It appeared here, in this place, was where most of her people had fought and died for their survival. There were a few dozen dead exorcists around, but far, far more dead residents of hell. The first she'd noticed was Valentino. He was, by all the horrors of all the circles, he'd been a monster. But even this was extreme. His body was torn open, his limbs twisted and broken in several areas, entrails hanging down to reach at the bloody street below. His face had been smashed in, teeth broken, glasses shattered. The shards of red glass fragments sticking in his eyes were stained an even deeper hue with his blood. His tongue had been cut out, and he'd been castrated and mutilated down there. Charlie didn't want to know what had happened to the pieces the moth demon was now missing, and didn't really want to think about the answer. The feature that struck her more than even that were the spears through his wings. He'd been stabbed through the leathery membrane's edges and strung up to hang on the side of the V tower, like an unspeakably massive specimen in some museum dedicated to giant insects. After Valentino, she noticed a few other notable dead. Zizi had been shot with angelic steel arrows over 36 times, laying sprawled out, jaws agape at the sky, like a dinosaur fossil brought to life and to flesh. Particularly sad, though, was the fate of Carmilla Carmine. The Carmines were laying next, a few dozen feet from the V Tower, towards the center of the city square. Carmilla had been nearly beheaded and stabbed 50 times. If Charlie had to guess, she would have put the mutilation down to the fact that the Carmines had supplied the arms needed to kill angels in the first place, and that Carmilla herself was an angel slayer. Her daughter Clara lay against her mother, one arm across her chest, a grievous wound through her side. It seems she had died trying to save her. Odette, the last Carmine, was there too. But she wasn't dead. She sat on her knees, staring at the bodies of her sister and mother with blank, dead eyes. Her hands lay limp at her sides, white lab coats stained in red blood, not yellow like the clothes of her sister and mother. And Charlie understood. She'd ran. She'd lived. And they hadn't. It was then she started to notice those who weren't dead. There were a few dozen sinners in the area, among them Zestiel, and the two remaining Vs, Vox and Velvet, along with a fish-faced young sinner with an earpiece and badly torn red suit. Rosie was also there, having somehow survived the onslaught, though not unscathed. One of Rosie's cheeks was cut badly, and you could see the teeth on the side of her face through it. Her dress was also torn, and her claws stained up to the elbow in yellow. Charlie recognized the glint of the golden angelic steel nail caps in her hands. Zestiel had a bad cut across his shoulder, and his cloak was torn in several places, but he'd gotten his hands on two angelic steel swords, and it seems he'd been able to fight back well enough. He'd survived, at least. Vox looked the worst out of all of them. His screen had been smashed badly and was shattered, his face a mess of dead pixels and broken static. He was only standing with the fishboy's help. He must have been Vox's assistant. Velvet was much better off. She had a few scrapes and cuts, and her clothes were stained badly yellow with angel gore, but she was otherwise unscathed. The wild, shaken look in her eyes, though, told Charlie that the fashion critic had been through a lot more than she had prepared for in the last 48 hours. Feeling all the eyes slowly looking towards her, Charlie felt the urge in her chest to... do what? Say something? Do something? Talk to these people? But what would she say? What must they think at her having been gone? They would be suspicious. They would doubt her. They would... no. Charlie steeled herself and calmed her mind before she flew off the rails. There was no Alistair to magic the problem away, no Vaggie to give her support. No, Charlie would need to face this alone. She couldn't afford to lose her cool. They were counting on her. More than that, she was counting on herself. Razzle flew by her side and started looking nervously at all the eyes on them, but Charlie mastered herself and marched with purpose onto the wreck of an upturned car. She stood on it like some great hero in a movie, putting on the face of confidence that she knew these people would need to see.
"People of Pentagram City," Charlie called. "Listen to me. I know that you know me. I'm Charlie Morningstar, the one and only heir to the throne of Hell, the daughter of Lilith and Lucifer, both now gone from this place."
There were murmurs, some sad, some amused. Undeterred, she continued.
"In this time of sorrow and loss, I know that you are suffering. I know that you are afraid. I am too, but I am not going to let that fear break me, and neither should you."
"Child of the Morning Star,"
Zestiel's deep, resonant voice called from the back of the crowd.
"What, pray tell, is thine point?"
Charlie ignored him.
"I propose we come together, not collapse apart like we have done before. Sinners hurt sinners, hellborn suffer, people kill each other and use each other for profit. Why? Why can't we look out for each other? Especially now, in this most dark hour."
"This is hell, mine princess,"
Zestiel replied.
ye do as ye will, and I in turn do the same.
Charlie's tone rose above his.
It doesn't have to be that way. We may be sinners, but that doesn't mean we can't stand together. Because if we don't, we all die.
There were murmurs of agreement. Some heads were nodding.
Yes, yes, they were listening.
Zestiel had shrunk back into the crowd. Odette Carmine had stood from where she had been kneeling and was looking at her, as if seeing her for the first time. Velvet, standing near the V-Tower with Vox, seemed to be staring at her as if she couldn't decide if Charlie had gone crazy or not, while the assistant was whispering in the TV host's ear. He wasn't looking Charlie's way, his screen angled down to lean towards his assistant. Charlie guessed Vox probably had a warped perception right now, considering how his eyes were, well, shattered. Suddenly, Velvet cupped her hands around her mouth and yelled up at her, mocking grin playing on her face.
The fuck does that mean, little royal tot? We're gonna make a bake sale? Practice hugging each other?
There were a few chuckles, but Charlie pushed on, undeterred.
We will come together and work with each other. We will rebuild. We will come back. We will be better people. But not for them!
Charlie screamed now, true fiery passion in her eyes.
Do you hear me? Not for them!
All were silent now, staring at her with wide eyes.
Fuck their version of redemption! Fuck going to heaven! They want to beat us down? They think we'll just give way and fall? No! We'll prove that as sinners, we are strong! Our struggles make us just as good, no, better than them. If we work together, we can prove it. All I need is for you to trust me.
At first, there was silence. Everyone stared in shock, processing what she had just proposed. To set aside needless hedonism, to grow and build instead of rotting away, it was a revolutionary idea. It had never been done before. Then there was clapping. One single person clapping. It was Odette. The last Carmine was weeping, her shoulders shaking as she was racked with sobs, barely keeping it together, but clapping still. Then there was another, and another, and then cheers. Whoops! Velvet was clapping with a begrudging smirk on her face, and Vox was nodding with some difficulty. Charlie saw sinners cheering. Even a couple hellborn looked moved. They really were cheering. Cheering for her. For the first time since she'd watched Vaggie breathe her last breath, Charlie smiled and felt actual joy in her heart. They were cheering for her. And in a moment of ecstatic joy, Razzle flew a victory lap around her head as she thrust her fist to the sky. It didn't matter how small the crowd was, how little of them were left. That collective cry of approval to her felt like the adoration of a million.